Welcome to Codecast. We're a podcast that focuses on everything tech, and we give you an idea of what developers, startups, and creatives are up to in Zambia and across Africa. Every 2 weeks, we explore different topics and applications of technology in the real world. Every episode is brought to you by Agora Code Community. For more information, visit agoracode.community or follow us on Twitter at @CodeAgora.
Huge apologies for the previous episode. I know that audio is a little bit terrible. So we promise we're going to do better. Right, Elias?
Yes, we do. That is a promise. I got it stamped on my right shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Last week. We're going to take pictures, and that has to show in the pictures during marketing.
No, but I feel some type of way about my body, so I don't think you can do that.
I just say that. No, I can't do shit about it. Okay, so we're not alone in the studio. I'm standing in for Cynthia today. She couldn't be here. It's a special episode on machine learning and artificial intelligence, I'm hoping, and data science and all this stuff. So quickly, we'll just let everyone else that's in the studio just introduce themselves, tell us a little bit about what they do, and yeah, who wants to start? Wow. It's like, you know that meme, Spider-Man meme, right? That's what's going on in the studio right now. Okay, Yassine, do you want to start?
I'm just trying to say to...
Okay, so I can go. So my name's Sipo Muyangana. So I do a number of things. So I'll start on a professional setting. So I'm an associate with an organization called ID Insight. So with ID Insight, it's pretty data heavy. So our goal ideally is to help through various ways. So we do have the typical traditional way of doing evaluations, getting the field, collect data, but we now we also have like very innovative ways in which we also do that. So that's what we use data analytics. We also do data science, and then we also use machine learning. So we use machine learning pretty much to more specifically in the social sector, that's thinking around, okay, we have all this data in the world, in the globe, and a lot of, say, agencies, governments, even a lot of big data. How do we then use this information to help them come up with and resolve certain social problems that they do, that the world is currently facing? So that's my job. And then outside that, I'm also involved in a number of activities. So Yassine and I together run what we call the Data Science Weekend Classes. Mm-hmm. So where we teach the fundamentals of data science and then some core courses that involves that. So that's mathematics, statistics, Python, and as well as machine learning itself. So last year was when we started. So we've done two cohorts. So that's a 12-week long course.
That's long.
Well, it's only on weekends. So if you look at it from that perspective,
it's not as long.
it's really not as long. But going forward, we're still having discussions as to what's the best way to structure these meetings, seeing that there are a number of players on board teaching data science.
Okay, that's dope.
Okay.
Yassine, do you want to go next? Finally.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Yassine Musayami. I work for an NGO called Family Development Initiatives. I'm their data and innovation strategist. So basically, what we do at Family Development Initiatives is basically there's quite a number of problems around us that we face on a daily basis. Yeah. So at Family Development Initiatives, what we're trying to do is bring in the component of technology and data to kind of address some of these social issues. Of course, Mukuma, you'd agree that we've done programs together. I think the first machine learning endeavor, something that I'll touch on later on, we did it in partnership with Agora Code Community. So all these initiatives are to kind of build capacity in that area, so we can have more Zambians speaking the language of data science, the language of AI, and Zambians involved in general in the sphere of these emerging technologies. So so that's a family development initiative. But then I'm also a founder and lead for a startup called Tsogolotech. So basically, Tsogolotech is so we've got family development initiatives as our clients, main clients. Yeah. So whatever problems that family development initiatives intend solving, then we come in as consultants under Tsogolotech, where we try to kind of introduce. We propose innovative ways in which these state-of-the-art technologies can be used to address some of these issues. For instance, there's a chatbot that we are currently creating, which aims at providing information to people around the areas of resource governance, tax justice, and things like that. Issues to do with sexual reproductive health, something like that. So we're leveraging these technologies, and then of course I'm also involved with the Global Air Drone Academy with the Global Air Drone Academy.
Take your time. It's okay.
It's crazy. So yeah, under the Global Air Drone Academy, we are basically also trying to teach. Of course, there's this drone technology that is emerging, and I think it's something that we've not concentrated on here in Zambia. So we're trying to teach, we're focused on kids for now, you know, trying to teach them drone engineering, drone coding, and of course, flying drones. We are hoping to roll it out to also adults and anybody that would be interested, you know, in flying drones. That's under Global Air Drone Academy. And then also, like Sipo alluded, also involved with the Zambian AI community. So the Zambian AI community, basically, our goal is to bring more Zambians, you know, into the space of AI, you know, by providing them with relevant information with regards to state of the art technologies. So there's quite a number of activities that we're doing in order to achieve this goal. One is on a daily basis, we've got like a WhatsApp group where people get to post different stuff like opportunities, what is happening in different parts of the world, and yeah, anything AI related. So we get to post on a daily basis. And then on a weekly basis, we've got the Saturday class that Sipo had talked about. And then on a monthly basis, well, we had started with AI meetups, but we just did one, and we're not concentrating much on that. And then on a yearly basis, there's the machine learning endeavor deep learning endeavor X that we do organize on a yearly basis. So over the past 2 years, we've organized like two, and yeah, I mean, soon we should begin organizing the third one. And each year we try to increase the number of participants. The first one we had like, is it 60 participants?
Yeah.
And then the previous we had like close to 110, and then we're hoping that this time around we can have at least not less than 150. So I think, yeah, some other stuff I'll talk as we go on.
Okay, great. That was a long intro.
Where'd you find the time to sleep?
Right, I have like 3-4 projects that I'm already drowning. I'm waking up much earlier than I usually do, and it's so stressful. But we'll get to that, because I do have a few things I'd like to ask around how people manage their time and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But I want to start from firstly some of the community work that you guys are already doing,
yeah,
and also well, I'm not really like a data science machine learning guy. And I know when we organized the machine learning endeavor, at that time we were heavily involved in all the different parts of like the developer ecosystem. And obviously Agora Code community has since found its focus and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that the endeavor has continued.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that this year we can actually work with DevCon, which is the developer conference Zambia also, so that we can run some programs together, because we just started our year-long campus outreach program. So we want to visit one campus every month.
Okay.
So we were at Zika's last week, Friday. So hopefully next month we'll be at another university and maybe another high school or something like that. So it's really open. If you guys want to give a talk, we could have a chat around it, and maybe we can work together and then see how we can get that outreach on the tech space. What is data science, machine learning?
What's the difference?
AI. Like, I always thought this stuff was the same thing until, like, I go to the Indaba and...
They switched up on you.
Switched up on me, right? I this episode is for me to learn.
Because
Cynthia is usually the guru around, like, you know, all this all
Python
stuff.
Khaleesi. In all her glory.
Super, you want to go first?
I'll let you
see
and take this one first.
All right, so data science, well, I won't go with the textbook definition.
Please do. layman language stuff.
Okay, so I'll try to contextualize the whole thing so that people get to understand what data science. I mean, when we talk about AI, people, what they see is AI, are robots taking over and stuff like that. I mean, let's try to simplify it and then bring it down to here, Zambia, and how it can be applied so that people can understand it from that perspective.
Also, just to butt in, Terminator, the new movie is out. Right?
Like,
talk about that later.
It's been out, and
it should be the last one.
I hope so, but just in continuing.
I really feel like that was an underwhelming thing to interrupt.
Dude,
that
I've
show.
Seen like 20 minutes of it, and I was like, no.
Yeah, so. Okay, so, well, if you've been following the what's happening in the news, I mean, you'd agree with me that I think the past 3 weeks we've, like, had a lot of floods in Lusaka. And in certain places are not accessible. I mean, areas like
Kanyama,
Garden House. People cannot... I don't know how people survive, how people manage, you know, to go to the CBD and back. So... So there's floods in certain parts of Lusaka, and people don't have where to. I don't know. People are displaced. Like you're sleeping, the next thing you see is the house is just just flooded with water. You know, so it's a disaster in a way. And then how do we manage that? You know, do we have to wait for Prime TV? Do we have to wait for ZNBC to come and then do the inspections, run a story, and then that's when DMMU is going to come in. So I think I feel technology, data science can come in. Well, we can just send a drone there, do the mapping, and get to see the sovereignty of the situation, and then, well, it can assess and then see, okay, this is the extent of the problem, and then give live updates, and then, well, the guys at DMMU then can then assess the situation, and then when going there, they're just going there to assess the situation, but they're going there with the necessary interventions. So that's one example. So I was talking about cancer. So with cancer, I think it's one of the cervical cancer, it's one of the killer diseases here in Zambia, and well, there's quite a number of deaths that have been recorded already, you know. As at year end 2018, there were about, I think, 12,000 estimated cases of cancer. So, well, how can AI, how can machine learning, how can data science be used in that case? So, people in developed countries are already using samples to kind of detect whether somebody is benign or malign, so something like that. So, that could be used, you know, as an example. And then blood samples. So you've got certain areas like just close by here, Lufunsa, you've got people that you've got hospitals that get blood samples from people, and they want them to be tested, and there's no sophisticated equipment there, so that they have to send them to Lusaka and then back. So why can't we use drones to do that? Load shedding is something else. I mean, we had, is it 24 hours of load shedding in certain areas? So how can we use machine learning? How can we use data science? How can we use AI to kind of, you know, based on the water levels, how are we able to kind of predict how much electricity we'll be able to generate in a year? And then I think whilst we still have the rainy season, begin, you know, rationing the usage of electricity. So I think that's how I define data science. I mean, it's how we can use it to solve our own problems.
I see. So you mentioned a lot of stuff about some of the calamities that we're facing,
yeah.
Some of the diseases and stuff like that. Is this the kind of, like, big data you were referring to, Sipo, when you're talking about the stuff that you do earlier? Like, do you have data sets that you use to kind of determine all this stuff? Like, where does all of this stuff come together? Like, where do they merge?
Okay, so let me touch on the first question, Elias. Like, how are we differentiating data science, machine learning, artificial intelligence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, even myself, when I got into the data science world, I just used to mumble jumble all the things.
I'm still mumbling jumble.
But in simple terms, I think pretty much, you know, data science, you just want to it's just like you're using statistical tools, programming tools to understand what does this information tell us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can use a simple example of, say, in a hospital, okay, some hospitals, they do have like a database where people, they just register who walked in, what disease, right?
Yeah.
So you have all that information that's seated in there. What data science then does is helps you understand what's going on here. Are there any patterns? Are there any systems? Is there something that this information can tell us? Maybe you have information that's worth like 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something we can draw from this information? Right? That's the data science. But then the machine learning component then comes in, is okay, saying, we have all this information. How can we then, we have this information, there's a potential, there's a challenge here. How can we use this information to be able to predict an outcome in the future?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if people then now get the difference between the two. So ideally, so we say machine learning is a component of
data science,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
So just to add on what Sipo, sorry.
No, you can press it. Yeah.
Just to add, so data science is more on the business side.
Yeah.
Ah, now I am starting to understand.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything, you know, using data for business processes, then that's where data science comes in. But anything using data, making just predictions, and that's more of machine learning.
So it's not necessarily like in the field of computer science per se, because I think that's a common misconception.
I would say the reason why people think it's computer science is because of the tools that are used to conduct the job, right? So we need tools like Python, R, and then people also do have SQL skills as well. So that's why most people think, oh, because I have programming skills, I'm a data science, but it's because you have the fundamental skills to conduct the job.
That's why
you are able to do data science.
And well, of course, data science is made up of different fields, you know, of course. There's statistics, there's programming, there's some aspects of, you know, business and stuff. So, that's the reason why people get confused, you know. So, I'm coming from a software engineering background, so I'll be more focused on, you know, programming. Is coming from a statistical background, so she'll be more around, you know, seeing the how the graphs look. Getting insights from the graphs, you get it.
Yeah.
If Mkuma is coming from a business side, then with him he'll be more focused on, okay, so yesterday this is how much profit we made, and these were the parameters. So if parameters change this way and that way, how much profit are we expecting to make tomorrow?
Mm.
I see. I want to come back to Sipo because I feel like it would be a crime for us not to talk about this like, how did you get into, like, data science? Because, like, when I... Because I'm coming from a software engineering background. We had a serious problem with uptake of, like, girls into... We were, like, 50 in my class, but more than half the class didn't want to do software engineering. I think we had two girls do software engineering out of nine. Was it nine or seven in total?
Something like that, but I remember in software, two girls.
Two girls. Total. And eventually, I think maybe only one of these is actually practicing software engineering. The rest are in banking doing maybe data analysis or something like that. So, like, how did you get into data science? And, like, what's the landscape in terms of, like, girls getting into machine learning and stuff like that?
Okay. So... I'll take a step back, right? So my career started from a research background where I did traditional research, where you get into the field, you collect data, you analyze it. You write a report, and my mom runs a research firm, right? So I had that experience from an early age because I used to support her through all of that.
Okay.
And then also one thing that I noticed was... each time after we did the data collection, because she would collect myself and my fellow colleagues, students, to collect the data, was she would actually hire an expert to come and make sense of that information, and then she writes the report. And then she would pay this person tons of money. So I'm like,
opportunity.
Okay, so we were the ones in the field. We got peanuts, but this expert... was able to come up with tables, make sense of this information, yada yada, draw some insights and get so much money out of it. I got interested. Okay, so what's going on here? How do you analyze data? How do you make sense out of information? That's where my interest grew from, right? And then Bongo Hive with Insight to Impact.
Mm-hmm.
Also had the same agenda of data science. That's something that's unknown to Africa it's not something that people know about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the agenda was, you know, we want to make as many Africans know about data science. We want to empower, you know, young Africans to be able to do stuff in data science. So they came up with this program called Data for Hack, where they said, okay, so... if you're a young person that's interested in data, that's enthusiastic about data, sign up. We'll pair you with an organization that's tech and has data, and then we'll teach you guys how to make sense out of this information, and then you can pitch a program out of that. So it's at that point when, because I am interested in data, I said, okay, I'm definitely going to step into this. I want to know more.
Yeah.
So when I joined the program, the Data for Hack, they had a program. So for those of us who are data enthusiasts, they said, okay, to be able to analyze information, you needed to go through this 10-course program, which was called Data Science. So when I started doing that program, then I actually got to it, and I was like, oh, okay.
That's where that guy
was
getting big bucks.
That's
where I make my money.
So this is what data science is about, and it's from that opportunity that I got to learn much more about data science.
Okay, so maybe just to zero in on something else before we continue the discussion.
Okay.
So, like, what's been, like, the female participation in data science since you got into it and stuff like that? And the reason I ask this is Sipo might not join us for the rest of the episode, so...
Okay, so female participation, broadly just in STEM, is very low. And then worse off in a field that's not yet got... what's this momentum on the market, right? So if there's a common STEM that we only have like 10% female participation, what more this niche field that no one knows about as much, how then do we get female participation into that? So I would say it's very low because I'll look at from my experience, right? So when I did the whole data science, when we did the whole Bongo Hive program with the Data for Hack, there were two females in the cohort.
Wow.
That should tell you something, right? So in all the conversations that I involved myself in terms of data science, I don't think there were more than 20% females in any of that setting. So I would say it's pretty low. And the bigger question then is, how do we get more females into this space?
Okay. So is that how you met Yasin?
That's how I met Yasin.
Yeah, well, I mean, we met at last year's Indaba, so yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the guys that Salim here, we met at the Indaba. Mkuma, of course, we met through the Indaba.
Elias,
we met through the Indaba. So, I mean, we've met.
Indaba.
Okay, so maybe we can even get into it. How's been the growth of the Indaba since the first one in 2018?
Okay, so.
Because I know you were in South Africa last year, right? For
I mean, I've been up and down, so
I know you're in Germany also.
Yeah,
I'm becoming a travel blogger, machine learning, data science blogger.
We have a lot of friends that are becoming travel bloggers,
and all of this stuff is bypassing me, and my passport is ready.
Okay, so, of course, I was in South Africa for some time, and then whilst in South Africa, we had that opportunity of organizing a deep learning in Indaba X, and we thought no, it wasn't wise organizing that side, and that's how we brought it here. And of course, we partnered with Agora Code Community, and then we, of course, successfully hosted the Indaba that was in 2018. And of course, like I alluded earlier, we had like 60 participants, and well, I mean, we didn't expect I think it was a good turnout for the first event. And then, after that, then I think I went back to Africa and then went to Germany and then, yeah, I came back. And then, yeah, when I came back, we did the second one. And, I thought it was going to be worse than the first one because there were no follow-up activities. I mean, we had promised people that we'd do follow-up activities because, I mean, part of the feedback that we got during the first Indaba were that, you know, I mean, the skill set was less. I mean, we never had people involved in that area. I mean, it was something that was new to most people. So that's how we organized the second one. And, to my surprise, we had, like, over 100 people who signed up. And, yeah, I think about, 110 participants showed up, and we had it just here at the University of Zambia. And yeah, the female participation was also good compared to the first one, because the first one only had like one female, and the second Indaba we had like I think about 20% females. And what was more interesting is, of course, the first one we brought in somebody from outside Zambia, and the second one, all the speakers were Zambians, which was a plus on our end. And of course, after the second Indaba, then we had this when I think we introduced follow up activities. Of course, we've had the data science classes, like two cohorts already, and we also linked them to, because we are not accredited trainers, so we linked them to Coursera, so they're getting certified by Coursera. So then, of course, from our end, we're just giving them certificates of participation. So the first one we had like 20, and the second cohort we had like 15 or something. But the major challenge has been because most of these people, when they hear AI, they don't really understand what AI is. So they expect, playing with robots or whatsoever. I think they just imagine things out of this world. So when they come there, you know, you do Python, you do this and that, then it's like they get disappointed and some drop out. And then, of course, part of our participants were, I think most of them were students, and then it was just difficult for them to attend every session. So those are some of the things that led to the dropout. And then, so that was to do with data science classes. Then we had, we just ran one
meetup.
The meetup, so through the Indaba, we've kind of had, been in contact with people. Zambians were doing AI, but outside the country, people like Jasper Hatilima, who's also in Germany. Mr. Francis Chikwete, who's in Japan. So those guys are willing to kind of share whatever they're studying with the community here. So he was in the country and he was one of our speakers, and people got to reach out and ask whatever questions that they had.
Yeah.
And he was offering to kind of, you know, mentor some of the participants. Then obviously, if you remember, so this endeavor that we do is like a local event, but then there's the main one that we do. So initially, it started in 2018, and then 2017. So 2017 was in South Africa, I was the only one. Then 2018, it was also in South Africa, but Stellenbosch. And then, well, we had like three participants from Zambia. That was me, Cynthia
yeah.
and Francis.
Cynthia did the keynote, I remember.
Then I got to win the Mata Impact Award and stuff like that. So that was in Stellenbosch. And then last year, we had Zambia again represent, Zambians represent the country at the deep learning endeavor in Kenya.
Yeah,
we had like Jordan, we had also Francis and myself. So, well, I mean, that is evident enough that the community is really growing, and at least we're getting our people exposed to what others are doing out there.
Okay, it's really encouraging that there's a lot of improvements.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to get feedback on success stories, and I think Cynthia and I have these conversations all the time. One of the reasons why people rarely go through to the end is because they may be unaware that there are people who are pushing boundaries, and they are going great distances by just by following through with interest and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I know Sipo is looking at me like time. So Sipo unfortunately won't be joining us for the rest of the episode, which is sad. So I'm trying to guilt her into staying.
How's that working out for you?
No, not very well.
Well, unfortunately, I have to step up, but is there any last question I should take?
I don't know. How can people get through to you? How can people find you? Find out more about the amazing work that you do? Your Twitter.
Okay, I think for now we can work with my Facebook account. It's quite active. So
okay.
Sipo Muyangana.
Okay.
Yeah, but then we can work on a more structured way in which you can reach out to me if you wanna learn more about data science, as well as being a female doing working in the data science machine learning space.
Dope. And I think we'll add links in description as well.
Definitely.
Definitely. We'll probably get more details from you and then just put them in the description. Thank you very much for coming through. We appreciate it. We wish you could have stayed for the whole entire episode.
Thanks for educating us.
All right.
Cool. Okay, Sipo is gone, but we'll still continue. I still have your scene with me, so awesome. So getting back to the deep learning endeavor and some of the success stories that we've had, maybe we start from the classes, because that's an entry point for someone into data science, right?
I think entry point would be joining our WhatsApp group and following our social media pages. At least they just get a feel of what data science is like, and then just get to understand what they're getting into, and then if they feel this is what they want to do, then they can now join the classes. Because I mean, it kind of demotivates other learners when, you know, people just come and then next week you don't see them and stuff like that. You know, there's lack of seriousness when people don't really know what they're going into. So I think first they just need to gather as much info as possible so they know what they're getting into, and then based on that they can then be able to make a decision as to whether this is something that they want to pursue.
So going back to, we talked about like the calamities that we've had. I don't know about you, but I don't think I've like fully grasped how like data science plays a role in.
Okay. I was just touching on. So right now there's this issue of gassing that's taking place. I mean, I think when the Facebook developer cycle pages, there was this conversation around, you know, how we can use drones to kind of map where these guys are. So basically, how can we use data science? So data science, it's just data science is all about using data to get meaningful insights from that data. So one idea would be creating an app, for instance. So an app, more like a panic button app. So where if somebody kind of senses an instance of gassing or they experience it, then they can just, you know, like just I don't know, it could be I cannot really think of the how the interface would look like, but something that would get information like the time, the GPS location of where that incident happened. So I mean, we've had many people complaining about this, and people are just talking. So there are uncoordinated statements. So that would kind of, you know, be a coordinated way of managing this thing. So we'll be collecting data, and then using data, we'll be able to map that. Okay, I think this area is more of a danger zone, or this is a hotspot, and then we can then send more police to kind of, you know, man that area or patrol that area. So those are some of the examples in which data science could be used.
We're using sign language.
Of course, we could also use drones just to map, you know, just for patrolling. You know, the instances where people are saying, no, people are jumping on people's roofs, and then, you know, all these stories.
So, like, we're recording from Lusaka, Zambia right now. over the last few weeks, we've had, I would call them strange occurrences. Firstly, I think we had the first cases on the Copper Belt, which is a region north of Lusaka, so in a town called Chingola. So like we had reports of people's houses getting gassed, right? So someone would I don't know what kind of delivery method was being used, but
like vents,
right? So like they'd gas a house and people would become unconscious, and then they'd break into the house, whatever method was used. And eventually, like, I don't know what would happen. There's numerous stories, and I call them strange occurrences because I've heard maybe 5 different reports, right? I've heard reports of people turning into cats.
Yeah.
And I've heard reports of people turning into cows. And listen to this, right? Someone turned into a cow, and when that person was chopped up, they were not bleeding. Like, this is strange stuff, right?
Yeah, strange stuff.
And we've heard stories about people's houses getting broken into, and there's a syringe, and they're drawing blood for ritual practices, which is like madness. And these reports have spread. They're not just on the Copper Belt anymore. They're now in Lusaka. Yeah. They're now all over the country. Yeah. So when Yasin says gassing, this is what he's referring to, and panic buttons, and you know.
Well, those are the signs you're giving me. Like, give them context.
Yeah, so, I mean, because, like, I mentioned earlier, you know, I work for an NGO called Family Development Initiative, and I think what we identified was there was a gap between social social scientists and engineers. So engineers are always crying, no, there's no problems to solve.
Which engineers are
you? So, and then there's this social scientist here, and social scientists, of course, have been doing things the archaic way, you know, interventions that they used 2000 and they're still using them now. And we in the 21st century, you know, people are talking about AI, people are talking about machine learning. So, well, how can these tools be leveraged, you know, to overcome some of these problems? And so the gas sealing incidents was one of them. Another example would be, well, during the delivery of maybe ballot papers or ECZ papers, you know, there are certain places in Zambia that are inaccessible due to floods and the likes. So, I mean, we could use drones to kind of, you know, we could use a zipliner to kind of send the exam papers there, and, well, I mean, we don't necessarily need to have a chopper or something, but just making use of a drone, it could do the work. And then, of course, I spoke about, you know, blood samples, you know, I don't know, it should take like an hour to get to Lufunsa and then back. So it would take somebody, I think, a day to just deliver, to come to Lusaka, do the blood samples, and then take them back. But if you use a drone, for instance, on average, the speed of a drone is about 90 kilometers per hour. So you'd find that maybe Chongwe is about 45 kilometers or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it should take, I think, something less than an hour for a drone to leave Lufunsa, come Lusaka, and back to Lufunsa. You know, so these are some of the ways in which we feel like AI could be applied. Data science, of course, you'd forgive me for the interchange of words. I think we did.
That's what confuses
me. We did explain what each of them mean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, not on a serious note, but they say if it is on PowerPoint, it's AI, but if it is code, then it is machine learning.
You know what? That actually could wait. So that makes absolute sense, right?
If it's on PowerPoint,
it's AI.
It's AI.
Yeah.
Why? Why? Why?
Wait. It made sense for me from a machine learning perspective, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because from the way I understand machine learning, it feels like it's more like training models.
Yeah,
it's a lot more programming intensive.
Yeah.
Data
GPU,
sets.
Yeah.
Performance issues. That's where the machine learning kind of comes.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI is the automation of.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking to business people, business executives, I mean, they don't want to go deep into stuff.
The mathematics,
I mean,
of the model.
It's a sexist. What? It's a. What's this?
It's the bougie side of the data science side, right?
The bougie side.
I mean, you know, when you just talk about AI, then, you know, it's like. What's this? Just forgot this. Sexist word of the. I mean, when you say AI, and then, you know, people look at you,
they're like, oh,
these are people that are happening.
Okay, so wait, I want to go more practical, right? Because
yeah.
We've given like examples of things that we can do with it.
Yeah.
What are examples of things that we have done with it already? Like, since you got into the space, 2018, like, you've been talking to a lot more people. I know there's someone in the studio who met you at an Indaba, and now they're working with you.
Yeah.
Like, what are some of the things that we have already done in our spaces with machine learning?
Well, compared to other countries, I think there's not much that we've done, but at least we're moving at a snail's pace.
Yeah,
I think there's a startup that is using AI, you know, to predict if a crop is healthy or not.
That's agri-predict,
yeah. So,
machine learning.
Yeah. I think even in the fintech space, you know, Sipo spoke about, you know, the data hack which was there, and I think the rationale behind the competition was around leveraging data science to solve some of the challenges in the financial space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this issue of village banking that's coming up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so well, you get to bank with people that you don't know of, and how do you gain the trust? You know, I've just met you today, Mkuma, and how do I entrust you with my money? I don't know whether you're going to pay back. So people have proposed you know, solutions where using your previous, you know, transactions, you know, be able to determine whether you're credit worthy or not.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the applications of data science. UBA, of course, they've got a chatbot that makes
Leo.
So yeah, I mean, there is progress, and of course we've seen some job posts here and there. I think the Zig, I think it has
mm-hmm.
got some data scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Some banks they've got. So there's no, it's, there isn't much, there isn't a lot of companies already that are employing people in that space, but it's something that's coming up and promising.
Okay, and what do you see as some of the things that, the areas of improvement, well, maybe I'm using the wrong word, what can we do to help accelerate? Because SIPO say this isn't, it's still a very niche,
profession.
A very niche profession.
So I think, of course, some of us, you know, we're just doing these things out of passion, and that's the reason why we came up with a community.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean there's nothing else that we're doing. So the other things that we're doing, you know, of course, we have to sustain ourselves. I think there's need for various stakeholders to come on board. Of, like, I know in Kenya, I've got a friend that works for Liquid Telecom, and Liquid Telecom is supporting farmers in Kenya, you know. They're basically using IoT, you know, to come up with various sensor data. So, like, the temperature, the soil humidity, and other things that, you know, farmers would be interested in. And then using that information to make, you know, it would help a farmer, you know, come up with certain decisions, whether they should plant this type of crop or stuff like that. So I think stakeholders need to come on board and support whatever initiative that people like you and myself are doing. You know, of course, there's the endeavor that is coming up. How can we get big players on the market to support such events? You know, it's not much that would require from them. You know, this maybe just 0.0001% of, you know, the profits that they make. So yeah, I think
that's
that would go that would go a long way, you know, in trying to promote these initiatives. I mean, tomorrow Mkuma might not be there, I might not be there, and then what happens to the initiatives? And they die just like that. So we need to come up with ways in which they can be sustained. And from what we assessed, people are not ready to pay for some of these services or some of these courses. I spoke about the Global Air Drone Academy that I'm actively involved in. We're teaching kids how to program, engineer and fly drones. But, well, mostly we're targeting, you know, people that are well-to-do in the society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people, you know, the people that, you know, you tell them that this course is this amount, and, well, they already know the value and they're ready to pay for it. And then coming from, you know, a background where was not able to do. I mean, sometimes it hurts me because, you know, it's like we're denying people that are less privileged in society the opportunity to learn some of these technologies. But, well, We have to ship in certain equipment, and then that comes with a fee. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are at. So we're hoping that through, you know, offering these services to people that are willing to do, through the profits that we make, then we can then
start to make them more accessible for
people that come from less privileged communities. Yeah.
Okay, so there's something that I want to go back to that you mentioned, and I think this is an open question, right? You mentioned that in Kenya we've got companies supporting local efforts, and they're using, well, before, if 2 years ago this is technology, I'd be like, wow, you know, when we talk about IoT, and IoT is just Internet of Things, those technologies aren't foreign to even us locally here in Zambia. So why is there a big difference in opportunity, not just from, let's say, partners supporting local entities, or even just local entities like innovating? I know, I think it's Kenya or Rwanda, where, I don't know, I think a company is called Zipliner or something like that. Because that reminded me, they do a lot of delivery for health into the rural areas. Into the rural, I forget the name, but I'll put it in the show notes. Why is there such a big gulp? It's like big gulf in difference between opportunities that are being taken advantage of in neighboring countries and us here locally.
Okay, so I'll also allude to the example I gave about the drone, Global Air Drone Academy, where we are teaching kids how to fly drones. So apart from just teaching them how all these skills to do with drones, the other thing that we're teaching them is entrepreneurship. So one thing that I think we're lacking here in Zambia is the component of entrepreneurship. Most people, when they graduate, the first thing they think of is entrepreneurship. It's like going to look for a job. Of course, yes, we've got quite a number of startups, and I was looking at some statistics. I think Zambia in Africa, it should be the second or something. I was surprised, but yeah,
because of the number of startups.
Yes, so we've got quite a number of startups, but those startups are people that maybe were working and then they decided to resign and then started their own thing. But I think we don't have situations where people straight from the university get to start up their own businesses. I think, I don't know, I stand to be corrected, but I don't think that's the case. In Germany, for instance, and other areas where there's a lot of research going on. It's one of the challenges that we've been facing. You know, we've got a few people that are doing research, masters. You know, research research-oriented masters, you know, mostly it's modular. So with research masters or PhD, you get to work on a niche, and then based on what you work on, then in other parts of the country, in of the world, they then come up with their own startup. So for instance, we'll give an example of the gassing story. So there's this gassing. So I come up with a research study. Okay, how can AI be leveraged? How can AI be used, you know, to address this gassing issue? You know, I've got that problem statement. And then I do that. Part of the work, I do it in my master's. And then I finish up whatever during my PhD studies. So after I finish, I then, you know, not go look for work or become a professor or what, but then start up my own startup. And then, yeah, I mean, people could be paying for that service, you know. As we're speaking, in Nigeria, there's about 15,000 drone pilots. 15,000 drone pilots, people that are flying drones, but those are unregistered and licensed. So you could come up with a startup where, if people want you to kind of, instead of hiring people or these security companies to guard your premises, you can just have this drone, you know, flying around your area and mapping whatever is happening. This is just an example. So, I mean, what I'm just trying to say in a nutshell is a situation where we've got people from university or from whatever, instead of first thinking of going to work, they think of maybe coming up with their own startups. I think that would help out in that would help us, you know, in terms of bridging the gap.
I see. You know, what you just said reminded me of something that I always hear. A lot of these skills, right, we talk about, are just a means to an end.
Yeah.
You know, like we're talking about entrepreneurship. You're just solving a problem using some of the skills that you picked up along the way, or partnering with someone that will help you, you know, stuff like that.
And you don't necessarily, sorry for cutting short, and you don't necessarily need to be
an expert.
I mean, of course, part of, you know, engineering drone is, you know, the soldering. And you find that kids 7 years are able to solder. Then you ask them, okay, how well did you learn this? Like through YouTube, you know. So there's quite a number of resources online that people can refer to or learn from, you know. So it's just a matter of interest and people just knowing exactly what they want to do.
I think it's also a matter of community penetration. I think other communities, web-focused communities, you know, I can't even remember all the other types of communities,
yeah.
But these have a bit of an upper edge, maybe because they are quote-unquote the sexy side of programming and so on and so forth. So maybe people become more enticed at an early age to get into it, and by the time they are leaving uni, for example, they may have a lot of the skills,
yeah.
Maybe even at an intermediate level, to then venture into having their own startup. But like we said before, a lot of people aren't coming from privileged backgrounds, for example.
Yeah.
So you're forced to get into a job to make money to support your hustle.
Exactly.
And then you start hearing the, don't quit your job until you've got, is it 12 months worth of savings, for example? You have to survive 1 year away from your job while you're, you know, finding your feet and so on and so forth.
Exactly, and that's, I think that's, again, one of the issues that we face here in Zambia, where it's difficult to become what you want to become. Let's say I want to become a data engineer or a software engineer or whatever. So I graduate from university, and my passion is in software engineering. But if an IT technician job pops up, then I go for that job. You get it. So people get up and doing things that they didn't want to do, and when they start doing those things, then there'll be no passion.
Okay, tell me about Sogolo Tech and the chatbot. I'm really interested in the chatbot because it's been with me since you mentioned it. You know, he mentioned sexual reproductive health resource governance. And is it tax governance?
Tax justice.
Tax justice. Like, run me through what each of those things are.
Okay, so I'm not an expert in the field, you know. I've got social scientists that guide me in these fields, but basically, so resource governance is basically how we could take care of our resources. So we've got minerals, for instance, and then we've got people in Solwezi, in Chingola, where these mineral activities taking place, mining activities. So, well, how are locals benefiting from whatever is happening there?
Mm-hmm.
You get it? So, we're trying to provide people with necessary information, like, okay, in Kalumbila, for instance, Kalumbila mine, there's a mine there, but how are the locals benefiting? How many schools are there? Is there a hospital? Are there roads there? So we want to kind of, so as we do projects in those areas, we also try to get information, and that information we then feed into the chatbot, and then people are able to access that information. And because the idea is to bring public office bearers to account. You know, like, what are they doing for the communities? So that's basically what we're trying to do. Social reproductive health is something different. Well,
it's not part of the chatbot, like.
Yeah, it is, but that's it's a different thematic area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it is because it's strange. You've got resource governance and tax justice, and then just throw in sexual reproduction.
Yeah,
like, it's really an outlier.
So sexual reproductive health also. We thought of a chatbot as a way in which. Okay, so Kuma, I don't know if you know HIV status, but when you go to when you go to a public health facility,
you not yet realize you're an ordinary question.
Yeah.
Or well, let's say you've got some STI or whatever.
Mm.
Some guys are afraid to go there because they'll be judged. Or I mean, when you want to do, you find out any information with regards, you know. Sexual health, you know, it's difficult to go to somebody because you're afraid that people are going to judge you. You know, how do we overcome this challenge? And in one of our projects that we've been doing, we've had, so because women, it's easy because, you know, they go, they take their kids or children for under five. So there, then it's easy to do whatever. But for men to visit health facilities, problems would be difficult. So they resort to self medication and the like. So I mean, if we're thinking, I mean, we're in the 21st century, and then we're thinking of ways, innovative ways in which some of these problems can be addressed. Like okay, so this issue of, you know. Males, you know, finding out information to do with sexual reproductive health or sexual health. So instead of, you know, interfacing with somebody that will judge them, there's just a virtual person that they can interact with and then can kind of, you know, give them advice or give them whatever information that they would like to find out. So that's a chatbot to do with SRH, and it will be on Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp.
Also, it's not live yet?
Not live yet.
Ah, okay. I find that very interesting. I've been thinking a lot about mental health, so maybe I might bounce a few ideas off you about maybe including that as something that's a part of a similar platform in terms of resources as well.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a neglected space. A lot of stigma also around issues to do with mental health.
Especially in Zambia.
Yeah, especially here. Like, generally here, there's a stigma towards a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a stigma towards careers, if you think about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, people get to interact with their phone. I don't know, per day, people, get to interact with their phone. I don't know how many times, just forgotten. But yeah, I mean, their closest ally is a mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we bring this information right to their mobile devices? So it's something that we're trying out, and we're agile, and we believe in failing fast. So we try out things. If they work, they work. If they don't work, then we learn from that and then improve on that.
Mm.
Okay, let's
I
go.
Like that failing fast.
Hey, like I'm adopting a failing fast approach this year. So like I've got a bunch of experiments that I have in the pipeline. I'm just like, you know,
fail
what?
As easy
I'm
as
just gonna try this
possible.
Out, and if it works, it works. And usually, what you find is, and this is something we talked about in our very crappy episode that we put out. We were talking about some of the things we need to look out for when talking about critical thinking, right? You're not supposed to get attached to an idea. You're supposed to be able to listen to feedback and all that stuff. So one of the reasons why we abandon certain things and we don't see opportunities that experiments usually give us is because we are too attached to the initial idea. We stick to it. So like one of the things I'm trying to do is just put something out there without any prejudicistic approach and then see what the data brings out, for example. What's the data saying?
Exactly. So, I mean, everything is centered around data. So, data makes decisions. I mean, they say data is the new oil.
It is.
So, yeah.
But I did listen to a podcast recently, and I can't remember the title, but when I do, I'll put it in the description. there was this idea and theory that we're starting to shift towards using data as a decision maker so much that sometimes we're just forgetting to think instinctively about certain things and then just try something new regardless of what the data is saying. So that's something to think about as a data guy. We're kind of finishing up the episode, but before we do, I know we've talked a lot about data science, and I know a lot of people might still not understand everything we've talked about, but I hope that we'll be able to give resources that will help them learn a little more, especially on the classes and all that stuff. And all the, and do you blog? Do you write any blogs?
We do have some posts there.
Okay, that's great. So, like, just in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
What do you think the future is for data science in Zambia in the next 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Like, from what your data is telling you?
Of course, based on our stats, most people that have been attending our events have been students, which is...
always a good thing.
Which is a good thing. And of course, they're going into the job market, and I think those are some of the innovative ideas that they could propose to their managers and their bosses as in, like, way of doing things. You know, because there's this talk in Zambia of, you know, people don't want to resign and want to do things like that. But I think with young people like myself coming on board, I think things will slowly be changing. And going into the job market, you know, with that information, I think that would help out, you know, jobs, you know, embracing this technology. So I think that's one thing. But from our end, I think we're excited that we are gaining recognition. Of course, the Zambian AI community, for the last three years, we've partnered with the Deep Learning Endeavor, you know, in organizing the, I think, third plus this year, the Deep Learning Endeavor. I forgot to mention this, but also I'm Zindi ambassador here in Zambia. So Zindi also is on board. We're working
closely with Zindi.
Zindi is a data science platform. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Cargo.
Yeah, I think I've heard about it, but I haven't used it myself.
Yeah, so so Cargo is a data science platform where data scientists across the world get to solve challenges. So, let's say we collect the data we're talking about. I'll try to localize everything that we're talking about. You know, we collect data, the gassing data, for instance. We've got the gassing data. So we don't know what to do with it. We're not data scientists. I mean, we just collected the data. So we get that data and then post it on a platform. And then we've got different data scientists across the globe that get to make use of the data to come up with different insights and predictions. You get it. So obviously, there's a way in which they are rated on the leadership board based on the metrics like accuracy, precision, and recall. So that's what they use, you know, to grade and to come up with who emerges the winner of that competition. But so Zindi is something similar to that, but the only difference is Zindi tries to solve African, it's centered around African problems. So it's, I think the founders are in South Africa, Cape Town, and but they've tried so hard to kind of, you know, work with communities across the globe. I know there's a competition around, it's a computer vision competition that is It's data that was collected in Malawi. There's data that is collected in Kenya. I mean, different parts. So they're not stigmatizing in a way, or what's this bias towards a certain country. But I think they try to get data from different countries, and they're open. You know, if here in Zambia we've got data and we feel it has to be analyzed, I mean, we can reach out to them. And then they can then post it on the platform. And yeah, so there are two. There's knowledge competitions and competitions that are, what's this? Like actual competitions where you get to win. So knowledge competition, you don't win anything. It's just for you to learn. But the actual competition, you get to win. And people are winning $5,000, $10,000. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we've partnered with Zindi, and the endeavors that we've been hosting were one-day activities, and this time around we're trying to make it a two-day activity. So the first day might be a hackathon. You know, people be given some data sets to just kind of solve whatever challenge, and then the following day would be the actual endeavor. And then, of course, the previous endeavors, we've had this issue of, you know, talking about what is machine learning, what is data science. This time around, we want to make it different, more data. You know, when you talk about data, the things to do with ethics. Ethics, regulation, and stuff. So it's something that we've not very much concentrated on. And even in the drone industry, that's something also which is a big thing. Like, people don't know what are the do's and the don'ts, you know, when it comes to drones. So it's the same thing, you know. People might invade other people's privacy, and we don't want that happening. So we want to also bring out such conversations among people, and people get to know, like, what data can they collect from people and what data can they not collect. Okay, if they collect this kind of data, then how do they, you know, keep it safe? Such kind of things. So, yeah. They've been... Stakeholders have been coming on board, of course, like Zindi I've just mentioned, and then from the community also, you know, we've got people now reaching out, asking when is the next cohort starting, you know. There's quite a lot of background, there's quite a lot of planning that is happening in the background, and also what has to be put into consideration is people are doing all this pro bono, so people then have to, you know, spare some time, you know, to come and teach, you know, in 12 weeks is not a joke. So, there are all these issues, but, I mean, I'm happy to say that, yeah, I think we're the community is growing, and quite a number of activities that we're doing, you know, I don't think the narrative is the same compared to 3 years back.
Yeah, true. Okay, so here's a question.
Yeah.
What's your favorite AI movie?
Well, there's this series that that came out. I'll just go for what's this. It's not really a movie. I don't know if it's a movie or documentary, but AlphaGo. I don't know if you've watched. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
It's a documentary, is it?
It should be a documentary movie kind of a thing.
Okay.
I'm going to Google AI movies.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's a. It's not
know.
Really my favorite, but well, I mean, it's because there's this guy from China, Li. What's his name? Li. What the champion of chess? Go. No, the Go. He was a Go champion and was beaten by AI.
No idea who you're talking about.
Li Sudo or something. Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds about right.
So I'll just run you guys through a list of quote unquote AI
yeah.
movies.
Uh-huh.
And I think from this list, you
yeah.
should be able to pick a few favorites.
Okay.
How long is the list?
Dude, I won't go through the entire list. This is really long.
Oh.
Did you guys ever see this movie called Chappie? It was South African.
Yeah.
rubbish.
Was it a South African movie?
I think it was South African.
It was shot in South Africa.
Yeah, it was very South African.
It's like District 9, eh? Yeah.
Okay, so Ex Machina, Transcendence, I like Blade Runner. The Matrix is considered an AI movie as well.
Mm. Well, how is Blade Runner an AI movie?
Dude, I don't know. I didn't think it was an AI movie.
That one doesn't. That one we disqualify.
iRobot is also considered an AI movie.
Well, that's an AI movie, but Blade Runner, it's dystopian future.
Even Age of Ultron is considered an AI movie.
It is an AI movie. Ultron is AI.
Oh yeah, right. I forgot about that. It's so embarrassing. Well, obviously Terminator, Dark Fate,
uh-huh.
which we're still gonna get to.
Okay, just skip the Terminator movie. Unless it's Terminator 2 was good.
Yeah, and I think the last two I'm going to go for is Minority Report.
Also good.
That's three. Westworld as well as, well, the movie and not the series. And
so the thing the series was based on, because no one has seen the movie. Star Trek is AI.
Yeah, 1979, I haven't seen the movie. But
Star Trek has AI. I wouldn't call it an AI movie. it's like calling Iron Man an AI movie.
Ultron was like it has AI, but it's not.
No,
really
but
an
it,
AI
it's
movie.
It's exploring the repercussions of piling all your problems onto an AI, and then the AI decides you are the problem. So, yeah, it's an I Age of Ultron is an AI movie. Blade Runner, no, it's just.
I think it's just
the movie that has AI in
from
it.
From this short list, I think Ex Machina, which I really enjoyed, and maybe The Matrix, I think for me would be like...
Even The Matrix, though, it's not so much AI
simulation. Isn't it not really, though? Like, that movie is premised on so many different
things. I mean, they're fighting against the machines, all in all, and they're talking about how a program goes rogue. That's Agent Smith, so I guess that's AI.
I'm sorry, that's almost every other movie, right?
No, I'm agreeing that it's an AI movie. Blade Runner, the guy was in love with, like in 2044, he was in love with an AI, right? But he was an AI.
I barely
stayed
away through 2049.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I enjoyed both of them.
I did not enjoy it.
No, I have a type of movie.
okay, so from the list, what's your favorite last?
Ex Machina. Yeah, I liked it. I liked what's this guy's name? The actor that plays that guy in Star Wars, Poe.
You know I'm terrible at like remembering.
I'm looking around the room, like y'all just looking at me. No? Oscar Isaac. Yeah. I liked Oscar Isaac.
Smith?
Sorry?
I think I'm mentioning the actual character in the movie.
No, I'm talking about the actor who played the guy in Ex Machina.
Hold up, we're checking.
No, okay.
Yeah, his name is Oscar Isaac. Yay!
Okay, anyway. Yes, I'll say Ex Machina. Out of the movies you mentioned, I'd really have to think about it, to be honest.
You know what, that's the point, you don't have to think about it. Yassine, what's your favorite from the list?
But I don't think of movies categorically.
No, done.
I've not watched most of the movies, so...
You know, for a data guy, I expected that you've seen more.
Okay, what's your favorite AI movie?
I just mentioned from this list. I can't remember all of them.
No, but like, one. Pick one.
I think I'd say The Matrix.
The Matrix?
Yeah, I know.
Which
it's a bit
one?
Cliche. All of them?
No. No, I'm not accepting that answer.
Okay,
they're varying
Reloaded.
Standards.
Which one was the first one? Reloaded was the first one, right?
No,
because
The Matrix was
Revolution.
The first
Revolution
one.
Was the third one, right?
The Matrix was the first one. The Matrix.
Okay. The Matrix.
Yes.
Then Reloaded, then Revolution, right?
Yeah.
I think the first two, for me,
mm-hmm.
Would be my favorite. Well, The Matrix would be my favorite.
Okay,
but
I'll
it's
accept
not complete.
It. No,
like,
no, it.
The whole point of sequels
no,
and all this
actually,
stuff is to form a complete
actually,
story.
The first movie is a complete story. And the second movie, that's when they decided, okay, now we're going to build this whole world. And just explore. What AI. The first one, if you watch the first Matrix movie and end it there,
It's a nice, well-contained movie on its own. Okay, there's no resurrection foreshadowing.
You know this. I'm gonna watch them again, and then I'll tell you all about it in the next episode. I'm on leave soon, so I have the time.
Okay.
So we'll talk about this again.
No problem.
Talk
no
about
problem.
This again. Okay. One last question. Just one last question.
Yeah.
What did you learn this month that you feel like is something valuable that others should know? This is not hard. It could be anything, even something small.
Yeah, well, thinking. I'm flying drones. You learned how to fly drones this month?
Okay, I'll start.
Okay.
So, I started listening to this new podcast, right? It's not new. It's just... So, this is what I've been doing. I've streamlined the content that I take in, right? So, I've been looking at the list of podcasts I listen to, and I'm starting to kind of shed off some. Like, I listen to podcasts like Planet Money, which is mostly, like... It's basically finance for dummies and, like, little, like, information on how stuff works in the financial sector and everything related to it. So stuff like that. And then I found this really neat podcast by Jeffrey Wei. So Jeffrey Wei is like this icon. Like, this is someone that, if you've heard of Laracast.com, which is an editorial-based site, mostly talking about PHP and Laravel as a framework. So he has this platform called Laracast where they do all these tutorials, and he's got a podcast. So this podcast has really short messages on, like, basically how to go about certain stuff. It's sort of like a motivational thing, but for me it's more practical because I feel like it really drills in on some of the practices that I go through. And one thing I picked up this week was something to do with prioritizing my time, right? Yeah. So, like, you know how social media... Okay, generally, you get distracted by a lot of things.
A lot.
So, like, really working on how I can... If I say I'm trying to build something, or I'm trying to, like, build out a feature, right?
Yeah.
And I know I'll build out this feature in a week.
Yeah.
When I'm dedicating time to working on that feature, I should maybe, like, turn off everything else and just focus on building out this feature, learning, like, new things around what I'm trying to do. So, like, no social media, no news sites, no distractions, basically. So that's something that I'm disciplined learning this week.
Mm.
Okay.
Oh, I go next.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how to pronounce the word very well because I've only ever read it. But idempotency. Idempotency. Yeah, it's a word. Anyone here know about the two generals problem?
Not since university, actually.
Yeah, okay. There's a problem where two generals are on opposite sides of the battlefield with their target in the middle. Neither of them can defeat the target on their own, only if they attack together. There are two ends of the battlefield. They have no phones, they have no way of communicating with each other across that thing, apart from sending someone. They have to attack at the same time. So they have to send someone. So imagine this, right? You're one general, I'm another general. Okay, I send one of my people to go and tell you, okay, this is the time that we're going to attack. Okay. How do I know that you got the message and my messenger didn't get killed on the way? You don't, right?
Do I?
No, like, that's the only way, because otherwise, it's kind of like a looped problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
You send someone to come and tell me that, okay, we're going to attack at this time, but you don't know if the person has reached.
And you also don't know if the enemy sent... killed your messenger.
Exactly.
Someone.
So basically, you don't know if the message has reached.
So
and then
like
you can do...
UDP problem.
Yeah, so you can do it like... you can do a thing where now you have to get a confirmation, right? So now I send the messenger and then you have to send a confirmation. But how do you know that I got the confirmation? So it's basically this thing. I'm not going to go into detail, but it's this thing where communicating systems kind of prevent, and it's more to do with transactions, because what you don't want is, for example, take a card, a credit card, right? You swipe, and then it goes and tells the server something. The server registers, but the response is lost, okay? If he tries to swipe again, that transaction shouldn't happen again. So it's basically a way of kind of having a pondency key that kind of says, oh, this transaction, I've already done it from a server side.
We'll put a link in
it. Look, yeah, like, you asked what I learned this month. So I'm just explaining, like, it's one of these things that, you know, you learn when you're working with certain systems, how to make your systems more secure, how to make them more reliable. So if you're working with any transactions that are very sensitive and require some form of confirmation, then I would recommend looking into that. Oh, it's your turn now.
Yeah, well, I've been long day, so my brain isn't really functioning and it's at its optimum. But yeah, I think it's quite a number of things that I've learned this year. So one is something related to what you were just explaining.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm banking with FNB. Mm-hmm. And then, I don't know, I've just been... So in December, I was receiving some messages from... So I think they used to come on a Tuesday at 14:28. Same message. So then recently, like, had two. So I don't know if it was a bug in the system or what, but it was trying to withdraw money, but then the money was that it was trying to withdraw was not had insufficient funds.
Mm-hmm.
So the transaction used to bounce. But well, something that I do is, you know, when I've got money in my account, so because I've got a smart account.
Mm-hmm.
So smart account comes with like two accounts. So there's the save and the actual one.
Mm-hmm.
So the save, I think the idea is, you know, just for saving, and you cannot access it directly. You have to put the money into the main account and that's when you withdraw. So I found that to be a safer way of keeping money, because I feel if money was in that the main account, then I don't know.
It's too accessible.
Yes. And then the other thing was, you know, dealing with kids. I mean, what synonymous to being a programmer or software engineer or somebody that writes code is, you know, being an introvert, somebody that, you know. But recently, you know, I got exposed to, you know, working with kids, you know, playing with kids, you know, handling kids. I mean, it's just fun, you know. You find 8-year, 7-year-olds, you know, having certain conversations that, you know, are just strange, you know. Like, you know, not even 27-year-olds can have such kind of conversations, you know. And, you know, even teaching, teaching them about these technologies, you know, it doesn't seem to be something that is new to them, you know. I mean, we're grappling, you know, understanding the definition of data science, machine learning and stuff. So we tell them something today and next week, you know, they'll seamlessly be able to explain what the definition of data science, machine learning is. They're able to understand the context in which it can be applied. And I found that to be something that is interesting. And yeah, I feel we should not undermine these kids in as much as they're kids. But I think,
have a few things to learn.
Yeah,
from
we should not just, you know, restrict certain materials. Like, no, since he's in this grade, let him learn this. No, I think just try out certain things, you know. If somebody's in fourth grade, third grade, you know, try teaching them Python and whoa, you'd be surprised.
Okay. Teach kids how to code. I can get behind that.
It could be coding or whatsoever, but certain things you feel like, I know, you can only learn this thing once you get to varsity. And
yeah.
I don't think in this age that we're in, you know, I've got, my niece is just 2 years old and, you know, she's able to go to YouTube and not just go to YouTube, but certain favorite songs of hers, you know, I don't know, she's just mastered how the names are spelled out. So she knows that, okay, this is the actual song, you know. And then, you know.
That is super interesting.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Okay, that's
something
good.
I forgot to mention, you know, Salim is one of our alumni in our data science courses.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so...
He's in the studio right now.
So if you want to say something, I don't know.
Do I?
Yes.
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you, actually.
Okay, Salim here. I feel like that passenger that stays at the back of the bus, and then when everyone else gets off, the driver thinks there's no one there. And then now you have to jump off and you're still on the bus. Yeah. Okay, so, well, the only thing I can say is data science used to be something that I thought was for the Western world. Yeah, but having been introduced to the deep learning endeavor, I was surprised to see Zambians doing a lot of things that I thought would only be done in movies. Take for example, he mentioned of Mr. Chikwete, the one who's in Japan right now.
Mm-hmm.
He came with a mini ECG machine that was made out of a box. Okay, and by ECG I mean that thing that we see in movies that does ting ting when you're about to die.
Yeah.
So he was able to make one out of a box, and then that could send responses from that same thing to a phone. So in a situation or maybe a scenario where the doctor is not in the room,
mm-hmm.
and then anything happens to the patients, the small machine would notify the doctor of exactly what's going on that side. Okay, so that intrigued my interest. I found myself attending the Saturday classes, and I was happy at the end of it having been able to make a machine learning model that could predict something. Okay, so it's been a journey that I thought was impossible, but now it's something that I look up to, and I wake up every morning thinking I will be that one person who's going to share and make someone else believe that we can do it in Zambia. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Just to add, just one thing that you can just add, I don't know, you have to edit, but yeah. So once we do whatever courses, what we've been trying to do is also link our learners to Zini platform so that then they can have a feel of how it is like solving real world challenges. So we don't want a situation where we teach somebody and then we just leave them hanging just like that. So once they have a feel of how it is like to solve real world problems and challenges, so even after the course, then they're able to kind of, you know, perfect their skills, compete in these challenges, and well, somebody can live off that, you know, participating in competitions. So those are some of the ways in which we've been trying to kind of sustain the program, but also ensure that, you know, whatever skills that they get are not just lost just like that, but there's a way in which they could be applied.
Okay, that's good. We are out of time, but if you want to get in touch with us, as usual, you can follow us on all our social media platforms. We are CodecastZM on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn at Codecast Zambia. We are pretty much on almost every streaming platform. Just search for Codecast Zambia, and our website might pop up also. If you want to find out more about our guests, I think I'll let them tell us where we can find them and everything. But yeah, this is Sawa_Bones. Follow me for any information. Also, something I forgot to say. So I'm looking for any developers that are working on a team either alone or with one other team member. I really want to talk to you guys. So if you're in that bracket, just go to our Anchor page and leave a voice message with your details, or DM CodecastZM or DM me so we can talk.
Hey, go down.
What?
You go down in the DM.
Wow.
No?
That's what I miss about you. But Yasin, please tell us how people can. And then the last.
Okay, so people can reach out to me via Facebook, Yasin Musayami, same name on LinkedIn, Twitter at Essential Brother, and yeah. I think it was email yasinayami at gmail.com, yeah. And then, of course, we've got the Facebook page, Zambia in Artificial Intelligence Community on Facebook. Twitter, we're not very much active, but yeah.
Okay, I'll include those in the show notes as well for anyone to get in touch with you also. Mm. Elias?
I am Jorelli360, JOR_ELI360.
Yeah. Okay, it's been CodeCast and we're
out. You've been listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by AgoraCode. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too, @CodeAgora.